Well, welcome back to the second episode of the Block 44 podcast. We're joined by Reese and Alex. Nice to have you back. Well, nice to have you back, Alex. And Reese, hopefully we'll have you back for another episode very, very soon. The way that we want to get straight into it this week is talking about Big Ange. So he likes to win a trophy very, very quickly. Forest are already out of the cup now in his first proper game. How long is it going to last for him? They drew to Burnley yesterday. Can he make it work at Forest? Have they got the players to work in his system? But Alex, we'll start off with you.
I think it's going to be hard because obviously it's not the players he wanted. He inherited this squad when it wasn't his squad sort of thing. But I think he's a good manager and obviously he wins things in his, not his first season, but he wins it in his second season. He'll win something. But I think obviously they're in the Europa League, is it?
Yeah.
And I'd say they probably are one of the favourites to win it. I'd probably go quite far because other teams in there, I think Forest probably one of the strongest. I don't think they will win the Europa League, but I think they'll get quite far. I think probably not, they won't win a trophy this season, but maybe next season though.
Maybe, there's always two seasons, isn't there, for Ange? Reese?
I think you just got to trust the process of him. Like, it's not going to be a smooth transition. Like, I think he shouldn't have been sacked at Tottenham. I think he won them their first trophy in 17 years. I think he's a really quality manager. I think the owners, the board, everyone just needs to be behind him, see what happens in January, you know, of getting, bolstering up the squad, getting more talent in. But I just think he's someone, he's not finished yet. I think he's still on the rise. I love watching his football. Like, I'd say I'm a big fan of him, like how he makes his fullbacks, he wants them quite up and down, and how he wants his team pressing, winning the ball. Like, he always beats Man City. Like, Tottenham's giant killer, well, Man City's giant killers is Tottenham. Yeah. And I just like the way how their attack flows. I just love watching them.
Yeah, that is the thing with Ange, isn't it? It is and always has been really, really entertaining football. But I've got to say, the one question, if you are a Forest fan watching, or if you guys could pretend you were Forest fans, this season, would you take coming 17th in the league and winning the Europa League?
That's no brainer. They haven't won a European trophy since the 90s. In my opinion, well, it could be different opinions to actual Forest fans, but me personally thinking, I would take a European trophy plus a Champions League sport. Like, who wouldn't? Absolutely. It's a Champions League sport. Like, it will help the club with the revenue, getting more money in. And I think Forest are one of those clubs that should be in the top 10, even top 8. That's the conversation. If we're on about club size, we're on about history, like, you see how Aston Villa and Newcastle are doing it, Forest should be in that conversation. And I think it's something we could see. It's not a no, but it's not a yes at the same time. It's one of those ones where you want to keep looking around the scores and keep watching the matches.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Reese, before we pass it over to Alex, I'll ask you one more thing on the Forest topic.
Of course.
How much money do you think Ange will need in January to make his squad his own?
Honestly, I wouldn't say that much. I'd say there's a couple areas they could look at. Maybe, did they get proper Alanga replacement?
I don't know.
I'm not sure what his name is, but they definitely got a wide player. I think he might have scored against Burnley. I think
that was Nico Williams.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I think they got a Swiss guy or a Danish guy. There's someone, not a perfect replacement, but I think there is some sort of replacement they have got.
I think they need a couple individuals to make it this team. I mean, this team has lots of quality. You look at up top, Chris Wood, he's getting older and older, but he's still banging in them goals. Yes, yeah. You got Callum Hudson-Odoi on the right hand side, the midfield and the centre half pairing. But I reckon, I wouldn't say a massive spend, but if you want to be quite, what's the word, ambitious, I would spend at least 50 mil in January.
That's not too bad then, really, is it? Yeah. It's got quite a reasonable amount.
If you want to be pushing for those European sports, because I can't lie to you, the Premier League gap and the Championship gap is just going to get bigger and bigger each season. So if they want that ambition, I really think it wouldn't even take that much, because I just think they're a quality squad anyways.
No, awesome. And Alex, your views on that?
I think I'd probably agree with Reese with a trophy, a European trophy. You can't say no to that. And it's the same with like what Tottenham did. They came 17th. But they've got this European trophy now. They're in the Champions League football, as you said. So I feel like having that prestigious trophy is probably more just for having one bad Premier League season, I'd probably say it's worth it. I, as a Bournemouth fan, I'd take that at Bournemouth. I'd take coming 17th and having a European trophy, because that's something to gloat about, something to be proud of. It's one bad Premier League season, but if you win a Europa League trophy, you get a Champions League spot at the end of the season as well.
Yeah, it's 100%. Yeah. So all in all, it's looking fairly good. Well, on paper, a fairly good appointment for Mr. Marinakis and the Nottingham Forest fans. But when we go over to Manchester and we're looking at Manchester United, it's a really dire situation. Obviously, they won yesterday.
Barely.
But yeah, it was a struggle. It was a push. Casemiro obviously got sent off as well, which isn't a good sign.
No.
So my main thing is, how long can Ruben Amorim last in this job? Because he is one stubborn man with that formation, isn't he?
I feel like it gets to a point where it's not working. It's clearly not working. I mean, yes, he beat Chelsea, but I don't think he hasn't got the players that he needs for his system to work. Mm. And it gets to a point where you just have to change. Like, you have to stop being so like, yeah, this is my system, this is how I play. You've got to be like, okay, I've got to work with the players that I have. I have to adapt my team to the players I have. And I think currently Amorim hasn't got the players that he needs to play his system. So I think it gets to a point where he needs to stop being so like set in his ways, and he has to just be like, okay, I'll switch up for a few games for half the season until I get the players I want. So I think he's got to change at some point, because yes, they got 3 points against Chelsea, but how many teams are going to get 10 men sent off in the first 5 minutes? Sanchez got a red card really stupidly. Yeah. So I feel like it gets to a point where you've got to change it. You have to just get out of your own ways and do what's best for the team. And Man United are a team that should be one of the best teams in England, but right now I'm not scared to play them. I don't think there are that many teams out there that are scared to play them.
Well, even as a Southampton fan, I think if we were back in the Premier League, I'd be quite happy to be playing Manchester United this
season. Easy 3 points this
season. Sure, it's just a 6-pointer really, isn't it, for most squads. But yeah, no, I can really understand that. But so from your perspective then, for Ruben Amorim to keep his job, does he have to change his formation?
That's a hard one, because I'd say he has to adapt in some way. Not the formation the entire game, but maybe just like the way he sets up in some games. In certain games, he needs to adapt the formation to the opponent he's playing. Like, you can't always play a back three against like teams like Man City, who will exploit that space. And they did. Haaland got in between the two centre-backs. But I think when you're playing certain teams, it can work. When you're playing other teams, you've got to change up formation. You've got to change your system to match how they play and to best play against them. So I think he's got to change them in some games. Yeah, I definitely agree.
No, perfect. And Reece, what are your thoughts? And obviously, Reece, before you start, I know it's really frustrating to keep passing the mic around. So Rode or Shaw or whoever is watching, if you want to provide some podcast mics, we're more than happy to take those off of your hands. But Reece, well, what are your thoughts on Ruben Amorim at Manchester United?
I personally don't think he's the guy for Manchester United moving forward. You think of the word Manchester United, the biggest team in England. You look at players like Virgil van Dijk, Erling Haaland, the superstar names. If Manchester United were still the team they were today, Virgil van Dijk would be at Manchester United, Erling Haaland would be at Manchester United. All these ambitious signings around Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool, they would all be at Manchester United. But how the club's culture and how they did with post-Fergie when Fergie left, it's a bit disappointing from a neutral's perspective, because they used to dominate England. You used to be scared of playing Manchester United. Even when Mourinho got sacked, I even just thought to myself, I was 15 back then, I just think it was a pointless sacking. Yeah, he must have lost the dressing room, but you're thinking right now, Ruben Amorim's form and how he's not getting the results. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer did way better. You know, Erik ten Hag did. Even, was it Ruud van Nistelrooy took charge for a couple games?
Yes, yeah, he did.
He took charge for a couple games, and even he was doing better. I believe, like, you saw what they did in the summer window, who they brought in. Like, quality players like Mbeumo and Cunha, but they are not Manchester United players. No. They're good players, they're good individuals, but they would play for, like, a Newcastle or a Villa. Like, they're not top tier, like, high up Manchester United talents, and I think it's more than the players and the managers, because you can just say Rashford this, Rashford that, but look what he did in the Champions League against Newcastle.
He's got the ability, hasn't he? We all know it.
Look what Antony's doing at Real Betis. Yeah. Look what he's doing there. Like, it's not the players, and sometimes I think to myself, it's not the manager, it's got to be the owners, the higher-ups, because in my opinion, they're not getting the backing and proper support from the Glazers, and it's just a in my opinion, a toxic team to join. Like, if Andoni Iraola got a call and said he's going to be a manager, I wouldn't take it. Like, that's, in my opinion, would be a suicide job.
Yeah, that's exactly what we said last week. Because on that exact topic, obviously, having Iraola here, who is probably one of the, well, one of the hottest seats in the Premier League, because everyone's going to want him. But that Manchester United job is a suicide job. That they've been through so many now, and it's clearly not that that's getting it wrong. Because like you said, the players, when they go elsewhere, are doing well. Onana went to, it's the Turkish league, but he's still putting a man of the match performance in his first game there. So it's, what do you think is going wrong? Obviously, they had a lot of financial difficulty. Jim Ratcliffe's come in. They've just posted record profits, I think, of all time.
It's not just that as well. Like, I don't want to come back to Tottenham, but it's the exact same thing with Tottenham, with the sacking culture.
Yes.
Like, it's I don't know why it's those two clubs specifically, but I just think it's something to do with the Glazers. Personally, it's just the Glazers, how they took over. When did they take over? Was they after Fergie or before Fergie?
I think it was around that time.
Because
I can't put a finger on it when.
I think when all those players, like the old players, like the OG ones, started retiring, getting older.
Yes.
I think that's where it started to decline, because there was no Rooney replacement. Mm. Where was Ronaldo's replacement? What? Angel Di Maria, good couple games. He was all right. And then they tried it with Memphis Depay. Like, they try signing the Ronaldo Rooney replacement, but they just keep failing and failing. And it's just getting weak and weak. And I'm comparing it from now to, like, Mourinho's era. That squad was strong. They had Lukaku, they had Pogba, they had Lingard, who was on form.
Yeah, but it was a strong squad. It was a really good team.
But it's just thinking to myself, how does Manchester United get back to where they belong?
And when it comes to their transfers, obviously we have mentioned that the players they're signing aren't necessarily bad players. But is there enough research and scouting being done beforehand? Because are these players coming in ready for a club like Manchester United? Because obviously they are one of the biggest teams in England alongside Liverpool, but also one of the biggest in the world.
I'd say yes and no. I'd say no for their scouting and getting players. I mean, they've managed to do well with finding the Pogba Cam replacement and Bruno Fernandes.
Yes.
But when it comes to other recruitments, like, you look at other world-class players, you look at players like Michael Olise, like, he could have been, what, United's talisman on the wing. Like, you look at other players, what, like, I know this is sound a bit stupid, but I just don't understand the whole situation with Garnacho, because when you can get a Garnacho firing, he's on good form, and they just decide to sell him like that. I just think they need to hire better recruitment staff, and they just need to be more on it. They're not very serious, and I feel for a lot of Man U fans, well, the older ones, not the newer ones, where they've had to see their team come. Because if I was in a coma from 2005 and I had to wake up 20 years later, I'd be completely shocked. But it's it's one of those ones where we'll have to see in the next 5 years, because it's given right now Leeds United where they were back in the day, where they were one of the biggest clubs, and it just seems like Manchester United are slipping away to mid-table supremacy.
So how far do you think United can get with this squad? So that probably only this season, because they will invest more.
In my opinion, I think they'll be lucky to get European football this year. But if they want to be, if this team could, like, be on their true potential, I would say Europa League at best. I couldn't see them get Champions League.
I agree with that. Yeah.
I'd say like a sixth, just scraping it like that.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think they're not too good. They're not good at all to reach the Champions League. I could not see them reach the Champions League at all. Like, you got teams like there's a big four. It's the big four now. You got Man City, Arsenal, Liverpool, Chelsea.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone else is going to go
past
that.
That's what it's saying now, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, I completely agree with that. And coming off of Manchester United, obviously they had their dominant period. Liverpool had a dominant period, albeit a long time ago. Man City, which is coming off the back of their dominant period. Who has the next dominant period in Premier League, do you think?
Well, I'm going to get stick for this when I see this. So, like, my whole family are Arsenal fans.
Yeah.
And I watch a bit of Arsenal here and there, and I think it's Arsenal's time.
You think?
I think they haven't won a title since I was born.
Yes, yeah.
I think it's their term. Mikel Arteta, for the last 5.5 years, has been cooking something for him. And the team looks quite breathtaking at times to watch. Like how they play football, how they press, how they go in the counter-attack, how they expose teams, how they break the teams down. And I think maybe not this season, but maybe next season they'll get their title. I think, as much as I don't want to admit it, because I don't like them, I think Liverpool will win the title again, because I think Liverpool have become the next Man City. I think it goes down in the food chain. Like, you have an expiry date for each team in the top six, and when it's your turn to go, it's going to be Man City. You know how it was Arsenal, Manchester United and Chelsea that were the laughing stock of the top six?
Yes.
I think it's going to switch around, and it's going to go from Tottenham, Manchester United and Manchester City.
Yeah. No, I could agree with that. Alex, what are your thoughts on that? Who has the next dominant era in the Premier League?
It's a hard one, because there's a lot of teams that are up and coming. They've got good young talent. You look at a team like Chelsea, they've brought in a lot of young players that are there. They've got, 10-year contract, 20-year contracts that they've got. They need to stay in place. So I think Chelsea have got a good young squad. I think you can say the same for... You can't say... I don't think Spurs will be in there. Arsenal, I'd probably agree. They definitely have a chance of being one of the top teams. They've got a lot of young players. You've got Bukayo, you've got Eze. He's not that young, but he's still a good player. They've got a good squad, but I think it's got to be the team that won the league last season, Arne Slot. That team, I think just the team they have now, they've got a great squad. They've got a lot of older players, a lot of younger players, a good mix of range of players. And I just feel like, especially how good they were last season, how good they've been this season, I think this is going to be their time to shine. And obviously, they won the league a few seasons ago, and they've been up there with the likes of Manchester City. But I feel like just they'll be the team to beat over the next few years. They've brought in some good young players. Virtus is only, 23, 22?
Yeah,
I think he's quite young.
Yeah, he's young, yeah.
They've got a lot of good young players, and I think their squad's it's only going to get better and better. They got Isak still quite young, Ekitike still got... I think they've got a good squad in terms of young and older players. I feel like they're going to be the team to beat in the next few years, 100%.
How long do you think they can keep it up for?
It's going to be hard, because you've got a lot of older players. You've got Virgil van Dijk's getting a bit old, even though he's still a great player. I think in a few years, he's going to have to get replaced. You've got Mohamed Salah out on the right wing. He's getting a bit older. He's going to have to get replaced as well. So it's going to be hard, but if they can replace those older core players well, I think they'll be fine. But I think it's going to be hard to replace players like Van Dijk, like Mo. I think those players are their once-in-a-lifetime players. Like Van Dijk, you could argue is the best centre-back in the Premier League ever.
Yeah.
You've got Mo Salah on that right wing, arguably the greatest right winger in the Premier League of all time. There's an argument there. But I feel like those players, they're so hard to replace. And if they can replace them, then they could do what the likes of Pep did at Man City. But if they don't replace them well, then I think they could still be a top team, but not as good as they win the league every single season.
Yes. Yes, I guess they sort of run the risk, like Reese was saying earlier, like Manchester United did. So when it comes to the end of their time, it will all be down to their replacement centre there, won't it?
Because
it's bringing the players in, but also finding the ones that have that quality that can continue from where they were into the Premier League. But if we go back to Reece quickly, because I just want to pick your brain a little bit more on that Arsenal one, because I personally think Mikel Arteta has been really, really unlucky not to have won it so far. Because if you look at the points that they've got and the period of time they're doing it in, you can probably put them up against any other period of time, and it's only because they've been against that Manchester City team that they haven't won the Premier League yet.
It's not that. I reckon it's down to depth. It's completely down to depth, because you look at what the starters, when they were first title contenders, what they had, Ramsdale, they had a good back line. And it's just the attacking options. It's Martinelli on the left, Jesus up to Saka on the right. When one of them's injured, or two of them's injured,
yes.
It is a disaster. But for Man City, if Haaland's injured, you got Mamouche. If Doku's injured, you'll put Savinho on the right.
Yeah.
So it's more down to depth, and because they're all young, they haven't done it yet. Like Man City, they do it like it's a
clockwork, isn't it?
Yeah, they do it like it's a fun kickabout of the lads, like Ivan Tony said. Like, it's experience versus non-experience. So it's more the case of, I think it was a good idea bringing Jesus in because he did win it with Man City, but the depth itself, and it's where the question is, we're bringing, like, I think Eze was a good signing. In my opinion, as much as it hurts to say this, I think they should have signed Semenyo. Like, I love him. He's an Arsenal fan as well, but I reckon with how he is right now, we'll be lucky if we can keep him for another year. If he keeps going how he is, he's gone to Arsenal. He's the type of player can unlock any type of game. Left foot, right foot, strong in the air, can throw a long throw. Like, he's the type of player I could see at Arsenal. As much as I don't want to say it, I'm very stubborn, but I'm at age where you got to look at the footballer's career. Like, he's not going to be here for the rest of his career. He's very talented, but he, in my opinion, I don't, some people might not agree, some people will agree, he could be that decider of, okay, let's go win it. Because I think Trossard's a good player, Martinelli's a good player, but I don't think Trossard is a starter for Arsenal.
Yeah.
He's a rotation player.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Bournemouth have been exceptionally lucky to keep Semenyo and actually time down for a new contract, which in itself says a lot about the club, but probably the manager as well. I think that's definitely had a big impact on Semenyo at Bournemouth.
I think it's because, and this is all the players that have signed their contracts, and hoping Andoni signs his soon, and Senesi, but it's a process we're trying to build. We've never had European football. We haven't won a big piece of silverware. And I think the boys and the guys saw last season and the back end of last season and want to try and do a part two, like Ange did.
Yes.
Like, we want to achieve greatness. We almost got to Wembley last year. We were this close, but we didn't. And so I think I heard he did have talks with Ruben Amorim over a move to Manchester United,
yes.
70 million. But he saw how much the other players were getting paid in wage and he just didn't like it. And we offered fat wages,
yeah.
As well as we've developed and nurtured the type of player of Semenyo, and he would rather stay somewhere where he's more familiar, see his options the next season. Because I was thinking whilst he was going through the contract talks, he's seeing who wanted him, and he's thinking to myself, you know what, I'm going to work extra hard. I'm going to smash it next season and I'll have more options. I think he would fit perfectly in an Arsenal or even a Bayern Munich.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
I couldn't see him at Liverpool. I couldn't see him at a City because he's one of those players, you got to let him have his freedom. You got to let him express him. You can't be like a robot. Like, take Grealish, for instance. One of the best players. He's going back to his form. Mm. One player of the month. And you've got to let players like that just express themselves.
Didn't even take any time either, is it? Did it?
Yeah.
Just straight back into it. All you got to let players like that do is have their freedom, and that's what the Premier League's lost nowadays. It's lost the magic of players being able to do what they do. Of the old Eden Hazards.
I just hope he has the 10-game burnout like he did last season, so we can keep him for one more season. I love him, but he's gone. He is gone. I've mentally prepared myself, but he is a gem. I think he's our first, I don't want to say it because I want to get stick for it, but his first near £100 million player.
Yeah, I don't think you get stick for that. I think that's a fair comment.
Like, left foot, right foot, I was shocked that when I found out, when he first signed for the club, he was supposed to be, because Solanke was injured, he's supposed to be a striker. He's supposed to be played up top. Because I remember at the Brighton game, we lost 1-0, I was there. He was up front, and then we had Traore in the cam, Otar on the right, and then he was on the bench for the remainder of the season when we got some of our proven players, because he was currently unproven. But when Andoni played him, it was apparent that wing, I know he says it a lot that striker is his best and favourite position, but wing
is
where he thrives. And people say it's always on the right. No, it's on the left.
Yeah.
When he's on the left, and you remember last season, you know, how he twisted you in and out?
Yeah, I was hoping we'd avoid that topic for today. But yeah, I do remember that.
But no, he's something special.
Oh, I completely agree. And Alex, what are your thoughts on that? the whole Semenyo situation.
I think Semenyo's a brilliant player. Yeah, it's going to be hard to keep him from this year. Obviously, he's shown he can turn up in the big game, scoring two goals at Anfield, two brilliant goals, one solo run. Not many players are going to be able to achieve that for like just at any point. So he's definitely a brilliant player. He can use his left foot, right foot. He's got a very unique profile of how strong he is, but how good on his feet he is. He's a big guy. He's big, strong, but yeah, he's so good on his feet. He's so quick. Players can't get him off the ball. He's a brilliant player. I can see him, like Reece said, at Bayern. I can see him there. The only thing with Arsenal is I don't think he's a nailed-on starter straight away because they've just signed Eze to play on the left. They got Bukayo Saka on the right, and they got Odegaard in the 10. So I think the issue of going straight to Arsenal would be that he wouldn't maybe start straight away.
Yeah, it's a lot of competition.
Yeah, and obviously I think he could push his way into the starting team 100% because Eze's getting on a bit. He's 28, 27, which isn't that old, but isn't that young either. But I feel like he needs to go to a team where he's going to start straight away, and it could be Arsenal 100%. And he's an Arsenal fan, so he could definitely play for Arsenal in the future. But I feel like he needs to be at a team where he's going to start, where he's going to be like not the main player, but where he's going to be one of the star players in that team. And I think it's going to be hard to keep him at Bournemouth next year. But I feel like when we do sell him, it's going to be for a fairly nice amount, especially with how inflated the market is for Premier League proven players. Your likes of how much did Brian and Bromwell to United for? Was it 60 or 50 mil we went to United for?
72.
I thought it was 72.
If it's 72.5, I think I'd say Semenyo is a better player than him.
I think so.
I don't think that's crazy to say either. And I feel like he could go for, if and when was going for that, then we can get like 80, 90, close to 100, as Reece said. Yeah, 100%. Just the style that he plays. There's not many like him in the world of football right now. Just like how unique his profile is. Like he can take a player on, and when he's on the ball, you like stand up. He drives, I think as a fan, you just stand up and you watch him. You're like, wow, he's going to create something here, and that's what isn't in the game anymore. Like the robots, as you touched on earlier, teams like Man City turning Jack Grealish into more of a turnaround and play back to the backline defence. Whereas Semenyo's the sort of player that will excite the game, will change the game, and I feel like he's the sort of player that makes you excited to watch him play. That actually watch him play a match.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But what's on the topic of transfers? Do you still get excited by transfers nowadays with how journalism works? I know you made a post about it as well. And as a Saints fan, the most exciting transfer we found was when our media, because I love our media team, we make some awesome transfer announcements.
Yeah.
But it's a fact of when you can manage to hide them from David Ornstein, Fabrizio Romano. You get a bit more of a thrill out of it then.
Was that the signing that you made from Brentford? And they posted it with the arcade machine. It was like, he didn't.
Fabrizio's watchtower, yeah, completely avoided him.
I thought transfers in the way is like, I get excited when I see the here we go from Fabrizio, because then you kind of know the player's basically signed.
Yeah.
That's nice to see a here we go, but obviously like, as soon as like a talk's made, it's posted. So it's a bit like, I get why people say he's like, he's killing transfers, because like it used to be more exciting. You used to be able to like think, oh, who are we signing? This signs came out of just anywhere. But I still get excited when I see the here we go from Fabrizio, for example. But I feel like once that's done, you're like waiting a few days for it to be announced, and it kind of dies off a little bit.
Yeah.
And you kind of know they've signed unless they fail their treatment, which happened a few times. But I felt like when Bournemouth signed that, well, I can't say his name. Veljko Milos Savlovic, it's something like that. He got signed. Obviously, he's an 18-year-old, not like the most exciting transfer of all time. But I feel like when he got signed, there weren't any reports apart from one, like from 3 months before, saying that we had interest in him. Other than that, there was no here we go. And I feel like that's so hard to actually do in today's game with journalists. They're everywhere. Like there could be one hiding around the corner now. Who knows?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's so hard to do, to keep a transfer quiet. And I think from what I saw, Mark McAdam came out and said that Bournemouth's plan was to sign a player in this window, and there not to be any reports about it. Mm. And somehow it worked, which I think is quite cool to actually see that it is still possible. Maybe not on like the big signings like Wembley to United and Sesko, like the big transfers in the window, but on like smaller transfers, there is still a bit of hope that they can be kept a bit of a secret.
Yeah.
Because I remember I was in Primark and I checked my phone. It said like announced. I was like, what? Where on earth did this come from? It was random, but yeah, I felt like it was nice to see that. But I don't think the here we goes are as bad as some people make it out to be.
Yeah.
Because like it's still exciting when you see here we go, but it does kill it a little bit. 100%.
No, I see that. And Rhys, what are your thoughts on transfers? Do you still find it exciting as it used to be back in the old days, or do you like it how it is now?
I'm 50-50 with it. I prefer, well, I liked the aspect of before Fabrizio is a thing. Like when we signed like players like David Brooks back in the day, or anything, like we'd get like a deal like thing from Mark McAdam, or like it'd be an announcement. I just think it's a bit like do you remember the most unhidden secret in world football? Milos Kerkez to Liverpool.
Oh no! Every post.
Every post. I'm telling you, last season, every post. Kerkez, Housen, Zabani. It was the most annoying and frustrating thing in the world.
Yeah.
Like I get with it. I get those are really talented players, but it's quite frustrating, like to be making 7 posts a day about the same player over and over again. Like in my opinion, it loses its speciality. Like I just missed like. Maybe, I don't know, maybe for me, but do you remember as a kid when Özil got announced on the TV, on Sky? Like, players like that, like, it's much more funner. Like, I remember when we announced the signing of Dominic Solanke, like, there was no here we go. It was just, like, deal done like that. Like, in my opinion, I know you got a report on it, but technically it's none of their business, you know? Like, it's between player and club to player. Like, it's... Sometimes I don't even know how they manage to get the information.
Yeah.
Like it's a bit wild, but I don't know. It's one of those where I just think it's a bit ruined. I just don't care anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. Like, it is a tough one, is it? Because there are those times where it would be so much better when you just see it on TV. Because like you were saying, Alex, when you see it, here we go. You then do get a few days where it's like.
Yeah, exactly. When's the notification?
Yeah. and you just sat there for a while, aren't you? But yeah. I think that there's room for both. But I think that it'd be better if there was a bit more of a mix of both, which would be nice. But speaking about something that Fabrizio posted about the other day, Jose Mourinho is back in business. Back at Besiktas. In. Is it Besiktas? No, not Besiktas. Sorry, Benfica.
Benfica.
Yeah, God. Oh, I'm getting that completely wrong. Before I put that on the internet. Yeah, Jose Mourinho, Besiktas. No, Jose Mourinho is back at Benfica after, 25 years? He's back there?
Damn. Rosonk. No, I think that's the perfect ending for him.
Mm.
I think he's conquered. He's came. He saw. He's conquered. I think he's done it. He's done it in Europe. I think this could potentially be one of his final jobs, and I think it'd be good for his legacy. I was quite upset how things ended at Tottenham because I still thought then he was still a quality manager.
Well, he could have won him a trophy then. As
yeah,
well.
Of course he could have won him a trophy, but he decided to sack him and then lost 2-0 to City. And yeah, exactly. But I think it's the perfect ending. I love him as a person and a character. If he came to Bournemouth and we didn't get Andoni, I would have loved that.
Yeah.
I love him so much as like a personality, and how he is with his players. He creates talented players. Like I just wish him the best, man.
Mm.
Like I think he's done it amazingly. Because I remember looking into his career. His dad was a professional player, then turned coach, and he was like a pro. And I think it was at his early 20s, he decided to retire and become a coach or sports scientist. And then he had a job, and then he became an assistant manager, and then he was an interim manager. And I just think to myself, you don't hear stories like that often anymore.
Yeah.
And I just think, just wishing the best.
He's definitely a legend of the game, isn't he? I think wherever Jose Mourinho goes, you can guarantee 2 things. Well, probably 3 things. Quality, chaos, and trophies.
Yeah.
And that's what you're going to get. I think, for me, I would have loved when he said he was looking for a lower-down Premier League team to go into because he hates UEFA for competitions. That would have been so exciting to see what he could have done with a lower-down team. But I agree with you. I think finishing off at Benfica is the perfect end to hit. Well, the fantastic story that he has had so far. But Alex, you got anything else to add to our good old friend Jose?
I think what Richard said is perfect. He explained it really, really well. I think that sort of manager, the game is lacking that sort of like the fire and the personality. There's a lot of managers just like talk to the camera like, yeah, we lost 3-0 today. Like just have a bit of personality. Like I get you're the face of the club, but you've got to have like, it's your team. You've got to have to be like passionate. I think he is passionate. If he's not anything, he's passionate.
He is.
The interview where he's like 3 for me, 2 for them. Like he's a proper fiery character. He excites the fans to watch him. I think like when you're watching the game, like instead of watching the players sometimes, you turn to like on the sidelines and you see him, what he's doing. Like he's kicking up a fuss at something or other, getting sent off, doing something. I feel like as a manager, you need to have some sort of personality, and there's not going to be like another coach like Jose in terms of how successful, but also how, like, I say arrogant in a nice way. Like, he's earned enough respect to be that arrogant that he
it's like Ibrahimovic, yeah, isn't it?
Yeah. He's the special one. He technically is. What he won the Champions League with Porto, was it?
Yeah.
Like, who would have thought that? Just the sort of character he is. He is the manager that you want to watch, not like a boring manager, but like just as a person, he's a great character. And I think the game, when he retires eventually, I think he's going to be missed 100%.
Yeah. No, I agree. But, and then talk about lower down teams where he was talking about coming back to the Premier League. I've got Aston Villa on here at the moment, who obviously, this is going to go after the game today. So they might score today for the first time this season, as the only team in the 92 that haven't
That's
scored
really
yet.
Bad.
How worrying is that for their season? Because obviously they've got some top quality players there, and they have done very, very well with that team.
I feel like it's not a great start, but they're going to kick on. Unai Emery's a great manager. He did incredible last season. And the attacking players they have, Ollie Watkins, Morgan Rogers, they've got, what's his name? The attacking forwards they have, they may not be on form right now, but there's some quality there. Morgan Rogers is an England international, Ollie Watkins is too. I feel like just the attacking flair that they have, that they're going to score eventually. I mean, they haven't scored yet, but it's going to come. The Aston Villa squad isn't bad. They've had a bad start, but I'm sure their team are working hard to fix it. But I feel like the players that they have, there's no way that they don't score at some point, surely.
Absolutely. But Rhys, what do you think? Are they going to break their quite incredible goal drought today, or
wait, who are they playing today?
I have got that somewhere. Villa are playing. That's next week. I think today they're playing Sunderland.
That's got to be 3 points.
Yeah, it has to be, doesn't it?
They've got to break the goal drought, and they've got to score some goals. They've got good goal scorers. What? Jadon Sancho is proven, but he lacks the discipline. The work ethic is there, but he doesn't use it. I think him coming back to England was one of the biggest mistakes. He should have stayed at Dortmund. And even from Dortmund, he could have made it to either Barcelona or even like a club in Italy. Or even, I'm going to sound stupid for saying this, but a Real Madrid. Like the way how he was.
He was an incredible player.
Like, he was an incredible player, but it's just down to work ethic, and he's comfortable when he's at his home. But when he's somewhere different, he'll kick on. But it's... Like Alex said, there's players like Ollie Watkins, Morgan Rogers. I'm surprised they didn't even sign Asensio as a permanent, because that would have been a no-brainer. He was arguably their best player of the remainder of the season. I'm hoping they kick on. I like Unai Emery as a manager. But there could be a chance where it doesn't kick on and it just doesn't work out. Like, he could have lost the whole squad.
Yeah.
Something could have been said. But I reckon that'll be fine. Mm. I reckon it's just a slow start. I remember 2 seasons ago when we had Andoni, we were winless in our 10. We had to scrape a 2-1 win against Burnley, unconvincingly.
It was at the end of October.
Yeah. Ages. Yeah, it took us ages, but I reckon he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like it's still early days. We'll have to worry till December.
Yeah, I mean they've proved themselves enough so far already, haven't they? To not warrant, well, they get a little bit of stick for not scoring yet, but not to be really in a threat for his job yet. And obviously, something that wouldn't have helped is just coming off the back of the international break. But talking about the international break, have you seen the news that they're looking to combine it next year in a month? Yeah. Nuts. It's like three game weeks into the season. They want to slap us with an international break, and now they want to make it 3 or 4 weeks long.
3 games, I think that's stupid. For someone who doesn't really like international football,
I'm with you.
I only like international football if it's the World Cup. But I think personally, and this is going to sound silly, I think we should have no international football, and then the football season should end in March, and then we should have a long block of international football and keep it like that. Like, because sometimes we would have the World Cup, sometimes we would have the Euros, but I think because there's no football in the summer and we have to wait a while for pre-season, I think having international football after the season instead of mid-breaks would do the whole football world better.
Well, that may actually help with the whole scheduling issue as well, wouldn't it? Because players are forced to play in unbearable amount of games. And that's why you see so many injuries in young players now. So by doing something like that, something has to change at some point, because only big teams like Arsenal, Man City, Liverpool can actually afford the squad depth to fund that. But when you come to smaller teams like Bournemouth, Burnley, so like the people that are lower down in the league that can't afford to have that depth there to fight week in, week out, it's where do we go with that?
Like I said, I think we should do that. Like, the season starts in August, and I reckon we'd be done by March or even late February. Like, I just think that, and then we have a month break, and then it's a 1 week or 2 week international. We'd have like a month of international football, and then there'd be another 2 week wait where you have to report in for pre-season. Like, I think that would work.
Well, it'd be better for international football as well, isn't it? Because obviously just by having 2 weeks or a week here and there, like the team doesn't get to gel, you don't really get to get into a playing style, understand the manager's tactics or anything from a managerial perspective either. So that would do the world of wonders for international football as well, in making it more entertaining, I think. But Alex, you got any thoughts?
On the international break, I think the idea that you posed about having an energy, it's good. I think that would work well. It would mean more football over the summer when we're just sat there bored.
Yeah.
We can actually watch some football. I think having it every 3 week. So what? They said October, then they don't want to have it. Like, have a few games.
Pretty
then
much the whole of October.
Then if they had a 3 week break. Yeah. It's just come back. We waited all summer. And then what? We're going to get to watch the team play three games. Get a three week international break of friendlies. Obviously, like, you're qualifying for the World Cup. But when England like play teams like Serbia, we scored. I was like, yeah, we scored. Like, I didn't really care. It's just like,
I don't even switch the TV.
Yeah.
No, neither do I. I'm the same as you. Look at the score afterwards.
I feel like it's like the World Cup game. I guess for a small, I think because we're England fans, we're like, yes, we're going to qualify. But I think for like teams like Wales, for example, I feel like their fans are more passionate about it because they don't know if they're going to qualify. But
yeah,
I guess
it is a bit more exciting, isn't it, for them?
But I think for a major country like England, we kind of know we're going to qualify. Like, if we don't, then it'll be somehow. But when we're playing these pointless friendlies, that players are going to get injured, like the amount of games they're playing. I feel like they're there for a reason, but I feel like in terms of club football, I'm definitely club over country, 100%.
Oh, same for me, yeah.
I think you said the same, didn't you? I feel like in terms of how it is that I'd rather the players don't go into national break and we keep them, because what if someone gets injured in a pointless friendly that means absolute zilch? Like, I feel like having a 3 week one is going to be so stupid. It's going to be so boring. Just friendlies, and it's gonna be pointless. There's just no point in it.
Well, I completely agree. But when we're on the topic of scheduling, and now they're taking away FA Cup replays, obviously it's good because it uncongests schedules. But for me, I'm really against scrapping FA Cup replays because it's so good for lower pyramid
teams, the
smaller clubs, because that's what it's all about. Like, when you hear about the magic of the FA Cup, small teams going on a cup run, that's what you want to see. But then also the fact that bigger teams can't play smaller teams. Have to play smaller teams. They can't play each other. It's just got to a point now where these sorts of cups are just rigged, and there's no hope for the smaller teams anymore.
I feel like if it's an FA Cup game, scrapping the replays is stupid. Because what if, like, say, a small team who are in the National League get drawn Spurs at home, like at the small team's team, and they get like a 1-1, and they get a replay to go to Tottenham. The amount of cash that they could earn from that could like fund their club for the next 10 years. Yeah. I feel like getting these replays, and because of like if they go to extra time, the team that are larger are going to have more squad depth. They can bring players on. It's unfair on the smaller team, but if they can get these replays in, they can go to the other stadium, and it's a once in a lifetime trip for the player, for a few of the players and the fans. Imagine being a fan of like a National League side, and you get to watch your team play away at Anfield or Old Trafford. That's a once in a lifetime experience for that club. And I feel like getting rid of these FA Cup replays, it's to prioritise the big teams, and I feel like that just kind of kills the entire vibe of the FA Cup. That is, the FA Cup is like a magical competition where anything can happen. And these small teams can go on run. I think that just kills that completely.
Yeah.
100% kills it.
I completely agree. Reese, you got any thoughts on the FA Cup? And is the magic of the FA Cup now gone?
I think it's modern football. I think modern football's killing the game. Like, we're not just on that one about, remember the Champions League, the away goal? I always thought the away goal was exciting. Yeah. Like, I liked it. I remember the best Champions League game I watched on TV was Man City Tottenham, the 4-3 one. It was so entertaining, end-to-end football. I think that, like you said, the replays, like, imagine if Poole Town, playing Bournemouth, and they had a replay here at Dean Court. That would be unreal. Like, we... Like, I love Poole Town. I love watching them as a non-league team. Up the Dolphins. I love watching them. Like, that could help push them to National League. Or, like, if they get to National League, League 2, like, who is that team that lost 3-0 to Tottenham in the last couple minutes? Maidstone? They should have, been able to play at Spurs Stadium.
Yeah.
Like, that one man of the match performance from that centre half did to the Tottenham attacker. Like. It's just killing the game. Modern football is killing the game. Like FA Cup replays, it's fun. It's like another leg of the Champions League, like for us. And it's something, in my opinion, what needs to come back. It gives more games and more opportunities, as well as I think they should add away goals.
I agree, I think so.
I think I think it's the rich taking football away from people like us. Like, they get to decide, oh, we want to keep this in, we want to keep that in. But in my opinion, it's one of those ones where there's nothing we can do. Mm. You know, like, all we can do is sit there and see our beloved sport getting spoiled each year.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because it's not even from a financial perspective. If you're one of the players and you're going to a Premier League or even Championship stadium, it's nuts. And the experience you get from that by going to a 10, 20, 30,000 plus seat stadium, that's the whole magic of the FA Cup, yeah, where it comes from as well, isn't it?
Compare it to like a 1K class seat stadium, you're just playing like a massive
stadium. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, just to have like a full ground without an empty part and you just see in the car park and whatever else, or to have an actual fully built, proper professional stadium. Are the bits you want to see. But I think those are all the questions that we have, so we will wrap up the podcast there. So thank you everyone so much for joining. Thank you to Reese and Alex again. Alex for joining us again. And we'll see you all next time.